White Rock and Entertainment, podcast number 478.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn! Hello
and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You are our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we have you. I was worried there for a little while that you had been swallowed up by the earth or carried away by flying saucers. You had your power went out.
We're seconds away from starting the podcast, and Van was talking, and all of a sudden I was sitting in the dark with headphones on with no power, and so we waited for the storm, the worst of the storm, to pass, and the power came back on, and now we're giving another shot.
See, I could have just done the show, and you wouldn't have disagreed with anything. You'd have just had to sit there quietly and listen and not disagree with anything. Wow, I missed my perfect opportunity. How silly was that? So, how are you doing other than getting your power back on?
Okay. Hanging in there like everybody else. It's all you can do. And, I've been very busy, so I haven't been online as much or following, things as closely as I probably would at other times. But I'm doing well, and I'm excited to be here to talk to you.
Yeah, well, I hear thunder in the background. You definitely have some weather going on there. We had a little bit earlier. But it's been a strange time because we do have football coming back, hopefully. And I wanted to touch on that really quickly. We were hoping it, but CNBC scared me to death about an hour and a half ago. They put up a video with a graphic, and my wife saw it and sent it to me. We were talking about it at dinner, where it said that 28 Auburn players and staff had tested positive for the virus. And I'm like, 28? I thought it was 3. And we were freaking out. Like, we kept trying to find a second source that was reporting it. The only thing that we found that said 28 was Clemson. So I'm thinking now that they got Auburn and Clemson confused. Imagine that. Somebody, I mentioned that on Twitter, and somebody said Clemson is Auburn with a COVID outbreak. So,
and again, it was not a sports reporter, we don't think. So
no.
That makes some sense to me.
Yeah, I was really concerned there. But, I said my wife is convinced there will not be any football this year because she's looking at it purely from the standpoint of how can it possibly work. And I understand that completely. But I'm in return, I'm saying to her, I don't know that they've got to find some way to do something to make money. You know, it's the whole, it's so much depends on it that I don't know that they can get away with not doing something. And so I want your opinion on this. This is the question I've been asking for weeks. If we do have a season and we start playing games, and let's say we're getting ready to play Arkansas, okay? That's usually like the middle of the season. So we're getting ready to play Arkansas. And then let's say that 30 players on Arkansas's team suddenly test positive. And this includes their quarterback, all their running backs, their receivers, their offensive line, their kicker. Does Arkansas forfeit? Do they play with basically their junior varsity? Would they argue the game shouldn't count since their actual team didn't get to play? I mean, what's going to happen? That's the thing that's really questioning me is what's going to happen when the numbers get worse than 3 or 5 or whatever, if they do. And in some cases, clearly they are. LSU's at 30.
Yeah, I think the funny thought is that people thought, well, we'll get these students back on campus so we can keep them from catching. Mm-hmm. And then they've gone out to all these bars packed with people and a bunch of them gotten sick. So,
yeah.
In answer to your scenario, I think the options are A, Arkansas forfeits, or B, Arkansas plays basically the JV version of the team and asks nicely for mercy.
Yeah, and just sucks it up and takes the beating, I guess.
And again, I think what people should prepare themselves for is a weekly occurrence of who's not playing.
Yeah. Yep.
And because if you think that players are going to live in a very small bubble for 6 months during the season, that's not going to happen. A bunch of the upperclassmen live off campus. I mean, at Auburn and at other schools, they're going to go out like Saturday after games or whatever. Like it's unrealistic. So in off weeks, people are going to do stuff. So I think they can talk about it and they can try to be more careful and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. I think it is going to be a every single game occurrence. Here's the people who aren't playing this game this week. And my mind immediately goes to things like, you know, who's going to want to know that the most? Gamblers. They've always had the inside sources about injuries and stuff, and I could see them, you know, that information, the who is, you know, testing positive on a team and is going to sit out is going to be like the hot information this fall for every single team, every single week. And what is Auburn's traditional release of that information been like?
Yeah, very tight, very close to the vest. I can imagine a scenario where a whole lot of games go off the board at Vegas. You know, like they'll start out, so-and-so is a three-point favorite, so-and-so three-point underdog.
Well,
and then all of a sudden it's been taken off the board because they just don't know.
Well, or you see some line that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Right. Clemson playing, you know, at NC State, and Clemson's a 10-point underdog, and you go, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
Like, they know.
Yeah.
They know Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne and five other key guys are out. So I think there's going to be this is my opinion. I think there's going to be a lot of that. I think there's going to be a couple of forfeitures. You know, hopefully not huge games, but it's going to happen where coaches are going to have to make decisions about do we, you know, roll out a bunch of guys, a bunch of true freshmen, redshirt freshmen that may not be ready for this and give it a shot. Mm-hmm. And there may be times when they do that. But I think they're going to try to play. I think, you know, there's not going to be full stadiums. It's going to be, you know, a third or whatever of capacity. And you know, probably some mandatory requirements from the SEC and from, you know, state health officials about what happens to get into a big stadium like that. And this on top, you know, again, we always have a game or two canceled because of a hurricane or thunder or, you know, like an extended lightning storm or something. And those things are still going to happen too on top of this. So, I think what we've seen in the last week with like Clemson and LSU is an indicator of kind of where things are going and that a lot more players are going to test positive, you know, as we head into the fall.
Well, as my wife pointed out, it could be that they could all be over it by then. But like you said, I mean, they're not going to just sit around. I mean, the ones that test positive for it now may never even get sick, or they may get sick with it now and be completely over with it by September. But the problem is, by September, it may be the other players around them that have got it. You know, these things kind of like go like dominoes falling. So, you know, just because domino 1, 2, and 3 have it right now, it may be dominoes 11, 12, and 13 come September. It's not like they're going to get over it and everybody's going to be done with it, you know. Plus, I don't know if you can get it again because apparently the antibodies show up for 2 months. You know, I'm pretty sure I had it in January, and so that means that if they did a test on me right now, it wouldn't show that I had it. And if somebody coughed on me now, I'd probably get it again, theoretically. I don't know if it's, you know, one of those things you don't get again or not. So I don't think they even know that yet. So
no, I think the science about the antibodies and how long your resistance lasts, we don't know that. And I know this is hard for people, the fact that we're talking about something that's a scientific issue that we don't have all the information on, and I think
that's
people
right.
are uncomfortable with that, but that's where we are.
That's where we are. And I keep thinking too, because I'm as a historian partly, I think in terms of the big picture always, and I've been thinking about how is this season going to look. You know, we already know the basketball season is going to look weird in the record book in the future because it's going to say, you know, postseason, well, there really wasn't one. You know, they played like what, two games in the SEC tournament, and that was it. And so there's just going to be like, it'll have like an asterisk and say no postseason COVID-19. And then, you know, and then I wonder, well, what's the football record book going to look like this year? I mean, is it going to say that Auburn went 7-2 because we won 7, lost 2, and didn't get to play 3 because our opponent, you know, did they forfeit and we got the win, or did they just cancel the game? I mean, the record book is going to look so weird after this year. It's going to have a lot of asterisks in it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just weird.
And the other side, like, you could see some games where the, you know, one team has to play the equivalent of their JV on defense, and so the other team's offense puts up huge numbers and mm-hmm. goes into some SEC record book kind of situation, and people are going to always look back and go, okay, yeah, but...
Yeah, who's got the best offense now? It was LSU, but they're all gone. So I don't know who's got the best offense in the SEC right now.
They still got Chase back at receiver. Yeah. The easy answer is Alabama, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's say that Alabama plays, you know, a seriously virus depleted Arkansas just randomly. Yeah, I could see like Alabama 111-3 or something, you know, and then there's a big asterisk, mm-hmm. great big asterisk beside it. So, you know, Arkansas sent the water boy and 2 cheerleaders to play dressed out. So, all right, well, we'll have to see. It's just one of those things that to me is interesting to speculate about because it's just so unprecedented. It just certainly within our lives. I mean, you know, there were world wars and the Spanish flu and all that, but that was a long time ago and not in our lifetimes. And it's hard to imagine. So, well, the other thing that we wanted to really do tonight was talk to a certain degree, talk about 2019, and go ahead and describe what it is, because you do a better job than me. It was kind of your idea. What it is you're thinking about in terms of 2019 versus 2020?
Well, kind of looking back and looking ahead. Mm-hmm. And what are the questions that are kind of still bugging us from, and the issues, the kind of things, then the themes from 2019, they're still kind of hanging around. But what are the questions we really want to know or need to know about this football team, you know, kind of looking back and looking forward?
Okay, so that sounds cool. So we'll look at that. And what are the things that are kind of standing out in your mind from last year? Because I know there's a few things with me, but I'm certainly curious where you're going.
I mean, I think the most obvious one immediately was starting a true freshman quarterback. I mean, you know, but this time a year ago, we were all on the Gatewood train.
That's right.
I don't know if you remember this. There was a whole lot of preseason hype about Gatewood, and now he's the guy.
You have failed me for the last time.
But he didn't really fail us, though. You could argue we failed him as much as he failed us.
Yes,
you know,
that's right. And so, you know, we started Bo Nix. He had the great comeback win against Oregon, but then he was really kind of poor the first half of the season, especially that Florida game. He was abysmal.
Not good.
And right after that game, Gatewood transferred. And I don't blame him still, because if Gus wasn't going to play him in that game, mm-hmm. it wasn't ever going to happen.
It wasn't. Yeah, exactly.
Bo Nix was terrible. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, with Bo out there, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. You know, there's a lot of Dickens running around because there were moments that he looked like. Well, let me address this. His dad, for those that only know the history and didn't witness it live, the early 90s, Patrick Nix was a very good Auburn quarterback. I would not say he was I don't want to take anything away from him, and I loved him. But I would not call him a great Auburn quarterback. I would call him a very good, steady, winning quarterback, particularly as a senior. And he had his moments, right, against Alabama, against Florida, famously. But what's interesting to me is that Bo has already had those same type of moments almost identical as his dad had in his entire career, just in one season, because he started as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Bo is in line to be a better Auburn quarterback than his dad was. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and I think, again, we've talked about this a lot, the learning curve for freshmen, the way they develop coming in is, you know, incredibly different from when his dad came in. I thought about this a lot, and I really regret that I didn't say this on the barbecue episode last year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's an old rule in football, and that is, like, if you start a true freshman at quarterback, then you should look at your schedule and take a road game and circle it and say, that's, we're going to lose.
You're right.
Like, that's a, I mean, it's an old thing because it's true. Yeah. And we knew we had to play at Florida at LSU. And the idea that we were going to go in there with the true freshman quarterback and he was going to play well in those games was crazy.
He played okay against LSU, I guess, didn't he? I mean,
he did, but I think the idea that he wasn't going to, the idea that he wasn't going to lose one of those games, in those two environments, in his, you know, early in his career, was not logical.
We made Florida's defense look like the 85 Bears in that game, which I still don't understand. He was running for his life.
Yeah, but we didn't help him.
No, I blame the offensive line as much as I blame Bo for that game. He was spending so much time getting killed by the Florida attack, the pass rush, that he couldn't do anything. But when he did do anything, he didn't do great. So, yeah, that's a game I want to go back and watch again dispassionately this time and just kind of break it down because I haven't watched it since it first aired. And I remember that we had our moments in it, and we just gave up. We gave up two or three plays, either on offense or on defense, that just broke our back. Right? We gave up a long touchdown pass, and we let Bo get sacked and turn over, whatever. And yeah,
it's a tough watch. In
well, we'll have some interesting quarterbacks coming in behind him, you know, because we've got the elder statesman there holding the clipboard, but we've also got the kid from Florida coming in that's supposed to be able to help him out a little bit. And didn't we get a transfer or something? I mean, I know that we got a commitment from a really good high school kid, but it seems like we also got a transfer.
We got a transfer offensive lineman. Oh, no, we got Caleb Newton.
That was it, yeah. So we got some bodies to stick back there if Bo gets hurt, God forbid, or if, you know, he needs to, you know, take a break or whatever. Yeah, so that's good. We have three quarterbacks, none of whom at the moment are considered, you know, studs, but any one of whom could probably get us by in a pinch if they had to. You know what I'm saying? We don't know about Chayil Garnett or whatever, but the other two, I guess, have a little bit of experience anyway. So, what about, you noted the defense. How are we going to survive without Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson? That's what I worry about. Because, I mean, we lost, what, four or five games with them. So I just worry about the drop-off.
That's fair. No, I mean, the defense was great, and the offense kind of let us down at times. And those were all-timers. I mean, those were, you know, some of the best players ever to play their position for Auburn. And it's who, regardless of who steps in for them, that it's not going to be as good. It's basically one of those things of, like, everybody else has to step up and play better because – the guys who are coming in for them aren't going to be as good for them. And I think we'll be okay at defensive end. You know, like if Big Cat Bryant plays Marlon Davidson's spot, I think we'll be okay. And we got some, you know, we got some guys at defensive tackle. You know, Truesdale is kind of a Dontavius Russell type. He's kind of a run stopper and a plugger. But he's not a guy that moves the pile and makes dramatic plays or gets a lot of pressure up field. So that's got to be one of two other guys, you know. We saw Newkirk a lot last year, and he's had a lot of injuries, but I think it could be him. And we have some younger guys that, you know, that have a lot of talent that could step into that spot. But I think it's a real question. I think last year the defensive line was the strength of the team, and this year I think the linebackers might be the strength of the team.
Yeah. And I'll reiterate the argument I keep making and just inviting people to hate me, but it may be just that the nature of football has changed so much, but the great Auburn defenses of the past were able to shut teams out. You know, you look at 87, 88, 89, 2004. You know, those teams had seasons where nobody scored more than like 18 points on them. I think that the 2019 Auburn defense was, in player to player to player on the field, was as good as we've ever had in a lot of cases. But they gave up way too many points. And again, it may just be because the sport has changed and offenses are just so sophisticated now that you just have a really hard time shutting out teams like Georgia and Florida and Alabama and LSU and all. I mean, it's just almost impossible. And so As great as our defense was last year, and I don't know they could have been much better than they were, they could not win games for us like they could have, you know, in previous years. They just couldn't. The only way that defense last year could have won games for us is if they had done everything that they did, which was a ton, and also scored a lot of defensive scores. And they just didn't. And that's always going to be my knock on them, if I have a knock on them, is that at times when we obviously needed them to carry the load because the offense just wasn't getting it done, yeah, blame the offense, absolutely. I'm not saying don't. But when you are done blaming the offense and you feel satisfied in your soul that you have blamed the offense enough and that the offense has been scorned and beaten down and they feel bad about themselves and you've made them feel bad, then look at the defense and say, and you guys, if you wanted to win the game, right, needed to find more ways to do stuff. You needed to find ways to actually strip the ball, intercept the ball, and score. That doesn't take anything away from the things that they did do, because the things that they did do were fantastic and going to be awfully hard to replicate this year. I'm not saying were they a great defense. Yes, they were a great defense. I'm saying if you wanted to win the game in those games that we lost, then you needed to do more. And I don't think that's an unfair thing to say, right? I mean, you can say, well, that's not fair because they did so much and they did great. And I will agree with you. It's not fair. And they did great. And you know what? We lost and lost and lost and lost. We lost a bunch of games, relatively speaking. And if we take it as a given that the offense just wasn't going to do much better than it did, and we weren't going to change coaches in midseason, and we weren't going to get, like, transfer offensive players in midseason, then that meant that the only alternative was that our defense last year scored points. Alabama's went through a streak of, like, scoring a touchdown every game for an entire season. So it was possible. And they didn't do it. So,
until the Alabama game.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what we talked about, that they did what we said, right? They realized if we're going to outscore Alabama, and it was definitely an outscoring type game. It was a 84 Florida State, you know. It wasn't a 1987 Iron Bowl 10-0. Then they had to score. They had to find ways to score. If the 2014 Auburn team had wanted to win that Iron Bowl, they needed to score like two more touchdowns. And they didn't.
That's right.
So, what about the running backs?
So again, you had this good theory last year that we had, you know, a lot of running backs, but how did you put it? It wasn't.
We had like one of everything, but they were very, very specialized.
Yes, we had a bunch of specialists, but we didn't have a bunch of like A-plus generalists.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're getting ready to hammer a big wooden bookcase together out of lumber, you got like a little hammer for testing somebody's reflexes on their knee, and you got like a little hammer for tenderizing steak, and you got a rubber hammer for knocking, you know, furniture, you know, soft pieces you don't want to damage in. So you got a lot of different hammers there. The problem is you don't have a big iron hammer, you know. We didn't have a big iron hammer last year. We had a whole lot of specialty hammers. And they were very nice specialty hammers, but there comes a point of there comes a point in a football game where you need to bring out the big sledgehammer, right?
And we didn't have the sledgehammer?
No. We had everything but that.
Yeah.
Imagine if last year's team had had the 2016, I can't ever think of his name now, with Kerryon, the big back that played.
Petway.
Yeah. Oh, God. Imagine a 100% healthy Cameron Petway last year, 2019.
Mm.
We wouldn't have lost a game, probably. Man. But we just didn't have that. So hopefully this year we have a couple of guys that can do that, right?
I hope so. And I think you were in a different place. I think, you know, I appreciate Booby Whitlow. I think he ran really hard and he really helped us the last 2 years with, you know, in some big games. But I think, on the scale of, you know, SEC running backs or Auburn running backs, like, he's not at the top.
No.
He's towards the bottom in terms of, so.
Well, the thing with Whitlow was we used him as an all-purpose, every-down SEC back. And he was capable of playing at that I want to say at that level. He was capable of playing in that style. Okay, it's not like he had to go up to a level. It's that he had to play that style of running back. He was capable of it, but it wasn't his game. If you look at Booby Whitlow running the ball, he was much more of a change-up running back than he was your first and second down running back. You know, he was more the spin move, the shifty, the find the little hole and dart through it. He was not Cameron Artis Payne. He was not James Bostic and Steven Davis, you know. He was not Ronnie Brown. So he was more of a specialty back that we kind of – he was just better at being the every down back than anybody else we had. So we had to use him that way. There was a point this season they tried to make DJ Williams into that every down back. And, you know, other than the LSU game, which was inexplicable, I still don't understand that game in so many ways about him. But other than that, you know, he was Mr. 1.5 yards, a cloud of dust, and tackled in the backfield for a lot of that season. I was not impressed with him. What did you think about Williams?
I mean, he wasn't as good as I wanted him to be. I know that. I mean, I think he had good size, and he showed flashes, but then there were a lot of other plays when he seemed to kind of not find the hole and just immediately get knocked down. So, again, I think a year in the system and a year, you know, working with the trainers and stuff to get stronger, faster, all that kind of stuff. I think he and Tank Bigsby can be the kind of the 1-2 punch that we need.
And Mark Anthony Richards.
Yeah. And so I think those three guys together, between them, I think we can come out of it with kind of 2A running backs, you know, 2 great A running backs.
That's what I'm really hoping.
And the running back position has changed from, you know, at Auburn is changing with it, that you can't go one guy 30 carries. It's got to be, you know, you're spreading them out among multiple guys, and that's what we're going to do. But I think we have better guys now.
Yeah, what I'm looking for is Mark Anthony Richards to emerge as the every down back that gets about 15 or so carries, DJ Williams improving and being a good, tough, short yardage back, and then because he'll be a true freshman, Tank Bigsby comes in maybe a little bit in the first quarter, a little bit in the third quarter, and just get some experience, and we'll see what he can do. Now, if he's spectacular, then obviously by game 4 or 5, they'll be playing him. But I just expect for the first few games, the rotation will go. In fact, I would be surprised if the starter on day one wasn't DJ Williams, just because he's played the most out of everybody coming back. Unless I'm forgetting, there's Sean Shivers, you know. But other than him, I mean, and he's kind of a specialty back too. So I'm looking for DJ Williams and Mark Anthony Richards to come out and establish themselves as our 1-2 punch in the backfield, with Tank kind of spelling them a little bit and just getting his feet wet, so that maybe by the end of the year and then going into next year after that, he'll be the man, you know. Him and Mark Anthony together, maybe all three of them. That would be great. If we could put three running backs out there that could dominate, that would be fantastic. Fantastic. So what else?
No, again, some of these we can go pretty quickly through. Again, we knew we had, like a lot of years, Auburn had a brutally tough schedule. And we played Georgia, Alabama. We played Florida on the road. We played Oregon, a non-conference game. I mean, that's, you know.
It's tough.
It was tough.
We did all right.
Yeah, we did. We beat Alabama in that huge game. And then we turned around and lost to Minnesota in the bowl game.
if there's one thing that Gus does that just drives me nuts, and I don't know if it's Gus so much as just Auburn in his regime, more than anything else, it's finding a way to lose to non-conference teams. We can play so well, and Georgia, we can play so well and then find a way to lose to Minnesota, lose to Clemson, lose to, you know, whoever. We have done really well against the Pac-12. I feel like we need to drop out of the SEC West and join the Pac-12, and we would dominate. But other than that, yeah.
We got that Cal series coming up.
That's right. I'm looking forward. So let's see. We lost Whitlow, you mentioned.
Yeah, so since the season ended, he transferred away. That's kind of we had a few other players who didn't play a lot transfer away, but Whitlow transferred away was kind of the big guy, and so that really put the running back room into a different place, where we really did have a kind of a different group of people with with Bigsby getting there and Anthony Richards coming back, like that's two, you know, highly recruited guys, the two highly most recruited running backs on the roster that we haven't seen play at all, but and they're going to be depending on them. And the other we can kind of shift forward and start looking ahead now. And the other big way this, you know, factors in is that Chad Morris came in.
That's right. We got to remember that all that we're talking about with the offense for 2020, it'll be a slightly different offense. It's not like, you know, we're going to be putting different players out in the same system they were in last year or whatever. This is a new deal a little bit.
That's it. I think there's a lot of, you know, I understand that. I think a lot of people are cynical about Gus and offensive coordinators and whether anything will be different. But I do think, you know, outside of who the head coach is, if you said Chad Morris was going to be the OC, I would be excited about that. I mean, he has a good reputation as an offensive coordinator. He did good things at Clemson. He did good things, you know, before he was at Clemson, and good things at SMU. And I think he'll be good for us as an offensive coordinator. And also, I think the, you know, the fact that Gus trusts him, he will, you know, let go more than he could with anybody else, because he doesn't view him as a, you know, somebody that's
18.
He views him more as a peer.
right. Yeah.
So I think Chad's going to have a real influence on offense. And I think I'm going to go back to what you talked about when looking back at 2019, football is different now.
Yeah.
This is an offensive age, and you have to win. You have to have a really high-powered offense to do a lot of damage and win games. And I think we're coming into some seasons here where we have a young, talented quarterback. We have a lot of running back talent, which talked about. We have a lot of receiver talent. And we have an offensive coordinator come in who I think can help us maximize that and kind of break out of some of the ways we have done things the last couple of years that have limited us, and especially in the passing game side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And in particular, we have more tight ends on the team now or signed up than we've had like in the last 6 years put together. I mean, if you don't think that, well, it would be kind of funny. If you don't think Chad Morris is going to be running the offense the next couple of years, then there sure are a lot of tight ends that are going to wish that they'd gone somewhere else.
That's right. And I think it's 100% a different – we're in a different place than we were 2 years ago when basically there were no tight ends on the roster or one.
Yeah.
Now we have a lot and recruiting more. So I think clearly they're going to use them. You know, we may not see the full scope of it this year, but Chad Morris throws to the tight end more. And I think it's going to help Bo with some, you know, shorter – safer throws, some bigger targets in the red zone, and I think it's something else to make defenses, you know, it's a harder to cover because it's another bigger guy out there instead of a smaller guy,
right?
So on the perimeter,
that can only help, and help with the running game too and all that. And I mean, when our offense has been at its best historically under any coach, it's been when we've been able to run the ball and do play action passes in the middle distance, you know, short to middle, mid-range distance. That's always been kind of Auburn's thing, no matter what formation, no matter what anything. That's always kind of been our thing, and having good tight ends, I think, would only help with that, help make that better. Mm-hmm. We talked about the defense a little bit. You say the linebackers are going to be the strength. What about the rest of the defense? How is that going to look?
I mean, I have a lot of faith in Rodney Gardner as a defensive line coach, and there's a lot of talent on that defensive line. I think we may be a situation where we play more guys, and there's not guy, not, you know, like last year, Derek Brandon, Marlon Davidson played a very high number of snaps in the games that really mattered, right? And it may be more we're rotating more guys and playing more guys, you know, 30 to 40 snaps and fewer guys, you know, 70 snaps. Mm-hmm. Just because I think we have a lot of depth on the defensive line, and there's a lot of my younger guys, so I think they can rotate him through and get him over and kind of talk to him about what's working and not working and have him play kind of at their, you know, where, and we'd be in a situation where in the second half of games we could bring in fresh guys and get them to go after the other team.
Oh, yeah.
And use that. I mean, I think, you know, Conus Miller is a guy who has a lot of talent. His ceiling is very high, that could step in at defensive tackle and make a lot of plays. But I mean, I think, though, you know, we've talked for years about the linebackers on Auburn's team, and we went through that one stretch where they were really abysmal mm-hmm. and we couldn't do anything. And now, now from then to now is the other end of the spectrum.
Oh yeah,
I think we're going to have the best group of linebackers in the country.
And there's just one name that's the reason for that is Travis Williams.
Yes,
man, he's been something else.
No, I think we're. I mean, and I think it trickles down because I think the young linebackers that can all play on special teams and get in there and run around and hit people and tackle and stuff. And I think that'll help the special teams too. And I think they we have a lot of depth to that position. And I think, you know, like I love Deshaun Davis, but I think Britt could step up and have, you know, kind of an all-conference year and be a dominant player in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be something to see. I'm hoping our secondary holds together and we're not, we're, you know, because the one thing you don't want is to have a good stout front seven or whatever, and then people just throwing over your head like the first quarter of every game in 2010. you think our defensive backfield is solid? I mean, it just it turns over so much every year. I can't keep track of it.
It does. I mean, again, we lost our two corners both got drafted, and I think this is one of those things that is only going to help Auburn going forward is we keep having, you know, defensive backs get drafted.
Yeah, so that's what a shame. Like
if you come here, you can, you know, you can make the NFL playing cornerback at Auburn.
No doubt.
So I think, you know, and Igben Yagani being a first-round pick basically is gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of talented young guys we got, you know, that we had coming back. We got a JUCO defensive back from Texas, Domio, who's probably going to be the third cornerback going in. I think we're fine at safety. I think the secondary is going to be fine. Again, I think, you know, there's fine against 90% of teams, and then you play like last year's Alabama team that had, you know, four NFL receivers. That's a different story. But I think against most of the teams that we play, I think the secondary is going to be more than capable of doing what they need to do.
So we talked a little bit about this, that we're trying to we really just don't have any good idea where Auburn's going to fit into the SEC this year if we play, and depending on how many games we play, but also because LSU has had a tremendous amount of turnover from what they were both on the field and in the coaching booth. And, you know, we know that Georgia's lost some of their offense, but maybe that was a addition by subtraction in some cases, and certainly their defense is going to be good. You know, we know that Florida is – it's amazing to me that Florida – I've been seeing all these Florida fans saying that it's, you know, it's this year or never. And I'm like, you've had that coach, what, 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And they're ready to – they're like, oh, it's this year or never. I mean, my gosh, I'm not shedding any tears for Mullen. I mean, you know, Dan Mullen. But it's kind of funny to me that Florida – we just don't know what they're all going to be like, and even Alabama – so it's kind of hard to know where we fit in the SEC right now. This is like a whole new ball game in some ways.
I think that one of the things I think about a lot is I think over the last 2 years, the SEC East as a whole has gotten better.
Yeah.
And we went through that phase when Georgia was the only good team mm-hmm. and everybody else over there sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have any tough games. You know, Tennessee was terrible. Mm-hmm. Florida was bad. You know, it really was like maybe South Carolina is okay, or, you know, Missouri finishes second or something. But there wasn't a bunch of really good teams over there. And so when the West teams played these teams, the West teams always won, and Georgia didn't have to push themselves. And I think that's really, really turning around now. I think, you know, Florida's going to be good again. Tennessee's rebuilding. They're getting better. Kentucky was really good the last 2 years, and I think they're going to continue to be good. And so yeah. I think that – the East as a whole, you know, has really raised its game. And I think it's going to be harder for the West teams to win games against the East, and it'll be harder on Georgia to roll through the conference schedule without a loss.
Yeah, and as people always point out, as Auburn people, we need for Tennessee to be good. We would much rather be in an SEC where Tennessee is really good and Georgia's mediocre than what we've had recently where Georgia's really good and Tennessee is mediocre, because we play Georgia every year and Alabama plays Tennessee every year. And if Georgia's always great and Tennessee's always crappy, well, guess who benefits and guess who suffers from that? Alabama versus us. So, you know, in a world where Alabama, let me put it to you this way, back in the 80s, Tennessee was better than Georgia most every year after Herschel left, which was very early on. And guess what? Well, back then we had to play Tennessee every year too, but Alabama was like an 8-4 team every year during that decade. So we like it when Tennessee is good, because we hardly ever play them anymore, and Alabama plays them every stinking year. So, it is. I think you're right. I think that the East is getting better. The West is kind of in flux because you just never really know. You know, you have a Cam Newton Auburn, or you'll have a Tennessee with what's his name? LSU with
Burrow.
Burrow, but yeah. You just don't know.
And we got three new coaches in the West.
Man, crazy.
Both Mississippi schools and Arkansas have new coaches. So you have the turnover to LSU, and you got three new coaches there. That's a whole different deal.
A guy made a good point the other day. I heard he said that don't look for a lot of turnover in coaches after this year, because this year is so weird. It would be hard to make any real solid judgments on a coach's ability based on this year, right? Because there's just so much of it is beyond anybody's control. And then B, even if you wanted to, there may not be the revenue to pay off the staff and hire a whole new coaching staff. You know, so you can expect that no matter how bad teams do this year, the coaches are basically going to get out of jail free card for this year.
No, I think the money is the biggest part.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there is no zero extra revenue cash laying around to pay buyouts and stuff. So I think you're going to see programs just roll with it.
We talked about running back a little bit. What about the new offensive line coach? He has impressed me as a recruiter. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the things you've seen is he wants big guys. I mean, not just heavy guys, but tall guys. I think everybody he's signed has been 6'6 or taller. So I think that's very impressive. And I think it's showing that he has a kind of something he's looking for in offensive linemen. And I think he's, you know, in on some high profile guys. And I think, you know, it's exciting to have somebody else come in at this time when we have kind of the wide open offensive line competition. We have a bunch of talented guys that we recruited over the years on the roster, many of whom haven't seen the field, but now they have kind of a clean slate with, you know, Coach Brick coming in, and it's a chance for them to show what they can do and let him, you know, kind of let them compete and see who can come out and grab one of those spots. They all have a chance to do it. So I think I like it. I think he had done a good job recruiting, and I think there's a lot of positive buzz around him and how he's handling offensive line stuff. And so I do think that's an area where, you know, Auburn can get better. We saw, you know, Auburn shake things up and bring in Cadillac at running back, and how it changed in recruiting, and it's made a difference in the running back level of running back recruits that we're getting and how they're doing things. And I think we're going to see the same kind of thing in offensive line.
And man, did we ever need that too. That if there was one area of the team that we needed to set off a bomb under, it was the offensive line and the offensive line recruiting. So that's fantastic. My favorite thing about our offensive line coach is that his dad was the head coach of the Barcelona Dragons. I will always remember that, and I'll always love it. Barcelona Dragons. Love it, love it, love it.
Don't you have a Ryan Fire jersey?
I have a Birmingham Fire t-shirt. Ryan Fire. Johnny Come Latelys. Johan Come Latelys.
There are no Scottish Claymores.
No. Oh, Scottish Claymore's Damian Craig's team. He set the all-time professional football offense mark with the Scottish Claymores. Or was it the Amsterdam Admirals? I think it was the Scottish Claymores. I think so. Oh, man. I was a World League fan all the way back from the beginning. I always say I went to a lot of Birmingham Fire games in Legion Field, and I don't think I ever paid a cent to get into any of them. That sums it up pretty well. Before we wrap things up here with our listener questions and stuff like that, we got to thank our patrons. And let me tell you, the patrons have been kicking butt. I really, really appreciate every one of you guys and gals that have come through for us. I was concerned that with the combination of the off season and the virus and the uncertainty and everything, I'm like, oh no, I know our patrons are better than this, but I'm just kind of in my secret heart, I was worried that they might bail on us or something. But they have stuck with us. They have kept the show going, and I don't think we've lost a person during all this. And we appreciate that. We notice it. You know what I mean? In other words, we pay attention. We're not taking you for granted at all. And I've been looking and going, man, they are hanging with us. They are not jumping ship because of the virus and everything like that. And that is fantastic. So you can join their esteemed and hallowed ranks and become a friend of the show, a part of the AU Wishbone family. Just go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange Become a Patron panel right there in the middle. And by the way, if you go to that page, at the top is the player that plays like the most recent episodes, if you don't want to, you know, fool with iTunes or Spotify or whatever. But if you scroll down below the Become a Patron thing, I've got the first 7 episodes of We Believed permanently linked there with little players from Podbean, and I've got little visual graphic bars that go with each one with pictures of the players and coaches from those years. And so seasons 1 through 7 live there permanently, so that when we're done, the whole thing will be right there on auwishbone.com. And we have 3 more to go for the general audience, but one of them, episode 8, is already out there. That's the Chizik years with Cam. And patrons are able to listen to that now. Just go to patreon.com if you're a patron, and you probably have to scroll back a few posts, but it's there. If you're not able to find it, let me know, and I'll send you a link if you're a patron. And I'll be putting together episode 9 pretty soon. We've had some other stuff we've been working on the last couple of months, and so I slaved over episode 8. That 2009 through 2012 one, there is a lot of stuff. That's like a 2.5-hour episode. It's got a lot of the national championship game. It's got a lot of sort of obscure other moments for Cam and Nick Fairley and everything. It's really cram-packed full of stuff and interviews and all that. So I'll be editing the episode that you and I recorded, John, a couple of months ago about the Gus era. About the Gus era so far, I believe. Yeah. That'll be episode 9, and then episode 10 will be the future of Auburn football, and we'll put that together when the time comes. But you can listen to episode 8 now. You can get all the other benefits of being a patron. Just know that you're supporting us, and we'll call out your name as I'm about to do now. Here are the folks who are currently doing it and keeping our show afloat. They include Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. You guys are front ranks, top of the line guys and gals. And then we have Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. You folks bow to no one either. You folks are awesome, and we appreciate you. Then we have William Morgan, Johnny Caldwell, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Richie, Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, and Christopher Stewart, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Axon, and Rich Reimer. A whole bunch of folks in that group are people I see at Dragon Con or that we've seen at our live shows in Auburn or both. And man, I'm going to miss if I don't get to do Dragon Con this year, and it's really iffy right now if they're even going to have it. Man, I'm going to miss seeing you folks. I really, really hate it. I got something else to mention about that in just a second. Then we get to the great folks of the next level. Chris Hilton, Kevin Mahan, Sarah Hines, Darius Benton, Rob Morgan, Blake Heron. Got some new folks in here. Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Millen, Kevin Kinoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Milton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, and Mike Finley. And finally, We have Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Mick Vigicana, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavach, and Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, I'm almost to the end, John, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Chris Brent Rumble, our one-time and anonymous donors. Thank you guys all so much. Go to www.auwishbone.com and join the family and join the fun. John, I wanted to mention, because I don't get many platforms to say things like this, one of the things I like to do at Dragon Con is unveil my newest books. And I was very excited that we would probably have a new Auburn book for Dragon Con, though the way things are going with Dragon Con, we're probably not going to have it ready anyway. It doesn't matter. But also, I have my new crime novel. And so I know a bunch of our listeners read Vegas Heist, and I've heard a lot of tweets and emails and stuff about it. And I just wanted to let everybody know real quick that Miami Heist came out last week. It is out now on Kindle. It is in paperback. It is on Amazon.com. If you go to a book, if you can go to bookstores right now, you can ask them and they can get it in, because they're probably not going to carry it. There's only a slight fraction of all the books out there that bookstores actually carry, but certainly Amazon has it. They have it on Kindle, they have it on paperback, and the same guy that did such a great job reading Vegas Heist, performing it for Audible, is currently doing it for Audible. So we're going to have Vegas Heist and Miami Heist, and I'm already getting ready to start plotting a third one for next year with Alan J. Porter, my co-host on the racing show Open Wheel that we do. So check out Miami Heist. I'm really excited about it. And that's enough of that. So www.auwishbone.com. Now, what else do we have to talk about tonight? Have we got the we have any listener? Do I hit the button? Should I hit the button?
Hit the button.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. And, you know, Mira doesn't sound like that anymore, because that's also her on our new closing on the show that you'll hear in a few minutes. So that's how much she's changed from when she recorded listener questions to when she recorded the closing. It used to be Maddie, but Maddie wasn't available the days I was recording. So I got Mira to step in and do it. So what have we got in the mailbox?
It's nice to hear the soundboard again, Van, I have to tell you. Mm-hmm.
Please clap.
So, all right. First email sent to us at auishbone@gmail.com is from Kevin Mahan.
Yeah.
Mahan?
Yeah, Kevin. I pronounce his name different every week, and I apologize. I don't know why it is. It's just me. Now I've made you do it, too.
Yeah, you're in my head with it.
That's so right.
He says, hi, Van and John. Just want to say you guys do an amazing job with the AU Wishbone podcast. They've been a real source of fun, entertainment, and support, especially an escape from the craziness of this year. Your idea is for keeping the content going have really been good, and I look forward to every new one. I just upped my support on Patreon, so we appreciate you.
Oh, absolutely.
And he said, you've been asking for new topics for ideas, and one thought that you should consider is maybe doing a discussion about individual series between Auburn and other SEC team, like specifically rivalries that are pretty well known that we talked about a lot, but it might be interesting to take the history of these series through the whole, Auburn playing Ole Miss, Auburn some of these other games through the decades. I like that idea a lot.
I do too.
I think there's some good. So I think if there's a series that you want us to kind of go into, kind of the ebb and flow of it, and what we remember about it, and what we think about it, send us your thoughts, and we'd like to do that. Next question is from Ryan Brown, and he says, which team in another Power 5 conference does Auburn over the last few years most resemble in terms of record and performance?
Ooh, I love this kind of question. I love it.
It's a good question. You got to think about it. Which team in another Power 5 conference does Auburn over the last few years most resemble in terms of record and performance? For example, are we the Michigan or Wisconsin of the SEC? Are we the Oregon of the SEC? Thanks, Ryan Brown. All right, what do you think?
Well, it's got to be a team that has been sneaky good and played for a couple of national championships in the last decade. And that's the thing, is that when people look at Auburn and try to rate us against other teams, other conferences, they think, well, where's another like 8-4 program? But what you forget is that the 8-4 Auburn is weird, John. We're an 8-4 program that plays for national championships every now and then, you know, and wins conference championships over Alabama and Georgia and Florida and LSU and Tennessee every couple of years. So I think that our counterpart in other conferences would be teams that if I just said them out loud, most people would say, no, you're overranking Auburn. You know what I mean? You're picking a team that is too good to be an Auburn counterpart. And I would say you think that, but is it really true, right? So, I mean, we're not Ohio State, but I think we've been better than Wisconsin over the last 10 years. I hadn't seen Wisconsin play for two national championships and win one. I hadn't seen Wisconsin beat the equivalent of Alabama three of the last 7 years. You know, I mean, who in the ACC has beaten Clemson three of the last 7 years? You know what I mean? It's harder than it first seems. I mean, yeah, Oregon might be a good one because they have played for the national championship. They didn't win, but they played for national championships. They've had a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, and they've been as good as anybody in that conference. So the problem with the Pac-12, not Pac-10, the problem with the Pac-12 is that Auburn is Oregon if the Pac-12 had a USC playing like they were in 2004.
Yeah.
And a UCLA that was about where Georgia is right now. You see what I mean? We're Oregon the last 10 years if the Pac-12 was a lot tougher than it is, you know.
Yes.
Because if the SEC was the Pac-12 and Auburn was Oregon, Auburn would be winning the SEC every dang year. So,
yeah, I think, I mean, we've been better than Michigan. I mean, that analogy does work on some levels just because they're in the same division with Ohio State,
yeah,
Penn State. So
Michigan would have had to beat Ohio State three of the last 7 years and play for two national championships in the last 10 years, and that hadn't happened.
Done that.
No, see, I don't think the Big Ten has an analogy to us. I do think Oregon is the best example.
Okay.
If the Pac-12 was better.
I got one.
Okay.
Notre Dame.
Well.
Not a conference team, but been in the playoff a couple times.
Yeah.
Had some big wins.
Better than you think they are.
Better than you think they are, but yeah, also kind of had a lot of 8-4 in there.
Yeah. That's probably so. And see, that's exactly what I mean. See, the average person hearing us say, no, Michigan's not good enough to be the Auburn counterpart, Notre Dame maybe, the average person is going to be like, those Auburn people, those Auburn homers are crazy. But if you look at the facts, it's true, right? And there's nobody in the ACC, because if Clemson is Alabama, who's Auburn? There's nobody. There's nobody in the ACC that's Auburn. There's nobody in the ACC that's Georgia. There's nobody in the ACC that's LSU. The ACC is Clemson and a bunch of Kentuckys and Vanderbilts. That's what they are. I mean, even Florida State is basically Tennessee right now. If that. And I don't know that the Big 12 has a good analogy either, really. Because, I mean, you know, Oklahoma, I don't know that we're Oklahoma. They've played better than us on the national stage the last few years. Of course, they've played a lot easier conference than we have, is again my point. But I mean, you know, who else in the Big 12 would be us? Texas. We've been better than Texas the last 10 years. They had 1 year, and that was 15 years ago. I would argue to you that wasn't it 2005? Yeah. I would argue to you that the 2005 Texas National Championship, they have milked more mileage out of that one game than any team has ever milked out of any national championship or anything like it ever. Because we still talk about, college football fans still talk about Texas beating USC in 2005 like it happened 2 years ago. That was 15 years ago that Texas did anything big. 15 years ago.
In 2009, when they played Alabama in the
they got killed
title game, and Colt McCoy got hurt the first play of the game.
Oh, that was a joke. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I just can't think of any game that a program has milked more mileage out of? I mean, you know, give us five more years and maybe we'll be milking that Cam season 2010. But at least we had 2013 right after it, you know, which was darn a lot closer than Texas is 2009. I honestly had forgotten Texas even in that game. Whereas I hadn't forgotten that we went and played Florida State in the Rose Bowl. Heck no. All right. Sorry. I get a little exercised about some of these things. That was fun. Got my heart going. That's good.
And that was a great question. And yes, thank you for winding Van up, Ryan Brown.
and again, I wanted to say that, and that was no knock. That was no knock against the previous question. It's just that I'd already read his email and responded to him, and so I wasn't all like wound up to go into that one. I hadn't heard the second question before, and that's kind of why it kind of set me off. So, just to be fair to our two listeners,
Are you sure that you're good on that question?
Oh yeah.
All right. Last one is from Carl Von Drunker.
Yes.
Who says, how was Ryan Davis so good that none of his short pass big game antics, we couldn't find one person on the roster to fill his spot after he left?
Well, he was so good. I mean, he was underrated right up until we all kind of collectively realized, holy cow, he's setting records. I mean, you know, if his last couple of seasons had gone by and nobody had said anything about records, we'd have thought, yeah, he's pretty good. You know, we wouldn't have thought record-breaking receiver. And in fact, when there was a Twitter question poll thing a couple of weeks ago asking for like the three or four best Auburn receivers of like the last, you know, the last 50 years or whatever. And, you know, you were seeing Terry Beasley, you were seeing Frank Sanders. I had Ronnie Daniels on there, you know, all those guys. There was a debate over Duke Williams, of course, and so on and so forth. And, yeah, I mean, he hardly anybody brought up Ryan Davis. And I'm like, he holds the record for that season, and nobody even thinks about him a year later, you know, 2 years later. It's so weird.
But what do you make of it? It's one of those things we didn't appreciate him when he was here. Yeah. But we appreciate him now because we thought, we got some guys that can do that, and they couldn't.
Yeah. Matthew Hill.
I thought last year that Hastings and Stove could do some of the stuff that Ryan Davis did, and they couldn't.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, the thing about Ryan Davis, he was kind of a quick slant, make people miss kind of receiver, and it's harder than it looks. He made it look easy. He'd catch that little quick pass and get upfield and make you good yards. I mean, he wasn't going to catch an 80-yard bomb. He wasn't Lawyer Tillman or, you know, Ronnie Daniels or whatever, but he could catch a 5-10-yard over the middle slant, diagonal in the flat or whatever, and he could make a first down out of it any day of the year against anybody. So, yeah, he was amazing. I think I include him, honestly. I think that I said, like, of the four receivers I put on there, and you know, Terry Beasley, I never even saw him play, so to be fair, I couldn't really evaluate him. So of the ones I saw, you know, I have to say Frank Sanders and Ronnie Daniels. They are the two, to me, that were the most difference-maker receivers we've ever had in my years of watching. And then after them, it gets a little harder because, Courtney Taylor, of course, and Lawyer Tillman. But then Ryan Davis is right there with those numbers. It's hard to turn him down.
That's right.
You have anybody I'm forgetting that you'd put on there?
On the receiver list?
Who was the, not Eric Lowe, but the other one, Carson Bailey?
Yeah.
Tyrone Goodson? Terry Bowden's teams had some good receivers.
Yeah, they put up some big numbers. Tyrone Goodson,
yeah,
big numbers.
Willie Gauthier. Yeah, Obamanu and Roma Shadu, Willie Gauthier. We've had some pretty decent receivers over the years.
Courtney Taylor.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, anything else? Oh, I had a thing I want to throw out there. Really quick. Just take me a second. I want to throw out this question, and I want our listeners to think about it and maybe tweet back or whatever, email or whatever. And then you and I can have a conversation about it at a future date, maybe on our next live show. And that is, I want to know who the listeners think, which Auburn coach, which modern Auburn coach, like starting with Pat Dye, because you're not going to say Doug Barfield, and I don't want to go back to Shug because I never saw him coach. So starting really with Pat Dye, we've had, what, six or seven head coaches. I want to know which Auburn head coach did the best job overall against Alabama relative to Alabama at that time, right? In other words, when you're evaluating each one and deciding which one did the best against Alabama, bear in mind, and no pun intended when I say bear in mind, keep in mind who the Alabama coach was, what the Alabama situation was, right? Don't just look at the numbers and say, well, Coach X won so and so many games, but Coach Y won fewer, so it's Coach X. No, no, no. Look at who they were coaching against, what was the quality level of Alabama at the time, and then tell me, all things considered, which one did the best job, and maybe which one you would, if you had to play one game against Alabama, which Auburn coach would you want coaching that team? Because I know there's a couple that are going to come to mind pretty quickly, but I'm wondering, when you really stop and reflect on the conditions that I'm putting out there, right, will they be the ones we think they'll be? So you think about that too, John, and you and I can discuss that on a future episode. Sound good?
I like it. I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Very good. Anything else for tonight?
No, I think we're pretty good.
All right. Well, I'm glad we got to do a live episode and talk about what's going on right now. Hopefully our players will stay healthy and stay safe, and hopefully our listeners will stay healthy and stay safe. And I guess other than that, we'll have another new live episode coming in a week or two, and we'll have other fun things coming along. I guess sooner or later, I'm going to roll episode 8 of We Believed out on the main feed. I'm not sure if that'll be next week or in 3 weeks or whenever, but it'll come along sooner or later. But in the meantime, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, Van.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.